Okay, it's a great relief for me, and I'm not the only one who is using transparencies, actually. So, but it seems that we are endangered species. So I go directly to the contents of my talk. So matrix elements seem to be now in fashion. So I have a leading theme here. So let's see what we get from a nuclear point of view. So first, I discuss some basic things about the nuclear matrix elements. Then some review of the theoretical, various theoretical approaches for these nuclear matrix elements. Then I compile in a chronological ordering the evolution in the matrix elements. And then I discuss something which was, discussed already several decades, but also discussed very recently. I mean, what is the connection between the two neutrino and the neutrinos, double beta decay matrix element? So, and also I will point out some pitfalls in that. So I will be quite critical, actually, in my talk. Then finally, something about the new possible experimental probes, maybe, and then conclusions. And this is coming from the fact that I'm scheduled at the end of the conference. I had lots of time to do that. So how does it look, I mean, from the point of view of nuclear physics, the double beta decay? So this is typical case, celebrated case, of 76 germanium decaying to 76 selenium here. So it involves a jump of two charge units here, so it cannot happen by only beta decays. It should be a second order process. So it should be something which goes through the virtual states. And this is the expression, typical expression which you get in the perturbation theory. So what you have is the left leg here on this side. You see this is the left leg, and the right leg on this side, and then the energy denominator. And what is characteristic of the two neutrino case is that you have kind of effectively two simple beta decays, but these have to go through the virtual states because of the energy conservation. So what you have to bear in mind is only the fact that now we use only 1+ states as intermediate states. So it is enough to use 1+ states for the two neutrino mode. The situation is changed. If you consider the neutrino-less case, which is more involved, due to the fact that now you have a neutrino propagator here, you have a massive Majorana neutrino, which is needed here, and you have a propagator which is creating kind of neutrino exchange potential, which you can expand in multipoles, and these multipoles you can combine with the beta decay operators. And what is the result? The result is that now you can go through states which are covering now every angular momentum and both parities. So all intermediate states are involved, all the multipolarities. And this is considerably more tricky for nuclear theoreticians, and to compute all the spectrum here and all the intermediate transitions. So, but what you have to bear in mind is the difference between the two neutrino and the neutrino-less case. So two neutrino case is through the 1+ states, and then the neutrino-less one is having all the intermediate states possible. So now something about the various theories. So there's a zoo of different theories. I mean, some of these are very much debated theories. Some are ruled out. Some are these under discussion, heavy discussion. Should they use, and what is the range where they should use, and so on. But the most popular ones have been the shell model, which is nuclear shell model, which is most complete theory, but which is most likely not very efficient for neutrino-less decay in the case of medium heavy or heavy nuclei. For the light nuclei, it is okay. But for the heavier nuclei, maybe not so good. And then the most popular model will be, which I will discuss about, is the random phase approximation in this proton-neutron form. There are several extensions of that, like the renormalized RPA, starting from 95 here, and then various other extensions which are adding more and more letters in front of this RPA. So self-consistent RPA, self-consistent renormalized RPA, fully self-consistent, etc., etc. So I'm going to compile now the results of these theories in a way that I cover this initial range till 95 first, then from 95 to 2000, and from 2000 on is the third category. So this is kind of chronology of these decays. So now we go to the compilation of these matrix elements here. So I will show now in these three categories what is happening to the matrix elements. So this is the amount of articles which have been written during the years about neutrinoless double beta decay. So first range is covering till 95. The next one is from 96 to 2000. And then the third category will be from 2000 on. So this is in blue. The color code is blue here. Here is this green, and here it is red. So we start from the lighter end of the nuclear. So here I have results for 48 calcium, 76 germanium, and 82 selenium. I was scanning all the matrix elements, so this color code, as was indicating, the blue one here is still 95. This green one is between 95 and 2000. And this red one here is from 2000 on. And as you can see, the color code is the one who is, I mean, these are the most reliable matrix elements, which I consider to be the most reliable ones. I have excluded a few theories here which are under severe debate, and there is more or less consensus that, I mean, this is suspectable to use those calculations, like these P and pairing calculations, which deviate very much from the other RPA calculations. Then the large-scale shell model may be not so good application for the neutrinoless double beta decay because of the very severe truncation in the model space, I mean, in the starting point. But anyway, and then there are some other models, like vampire type of models, which are not including in the first versions the proton-neutron interaction, which is very essential for the charge exchange reactions. So, and there are some old simple shell model calculations which are using weak coupling approximation. These are also excluded. So as you can see, I mean, you can see yourself, you can make your own judgment about this. I mean, there is no convergence, at least visible, for example, for this case. On the other hand, for selenium, you have some kind of consistency between the matrix elements, but still you can see the spread of these matrix elements as a function of time. And as Frank was showing, I mean, you can take some average if you want, but is there any meaning with this average? I mean, this is another question. And if you go to the heavier masses, you have similar results here. So the chronological ordering, I mean, for molybdenum, you have, I mean, lots of spread in the matrix elements, as you can see, as a function of time. So, I mean, this is the... I would consider quite a challenge to the nuclear theory. Actually, 100 region is not so simple to describe by nuclear theory. Then for the heaviest ones, you have maybe some convergence. This is rather looks rather nice, actually, in terms of the consistency of the nuclear matrix elements. But still, I mean, there's lots of spread. And here you can see these are the various, I mean, new developments in the RPA, so-called higher RPA frameworks. And if you convert that to half-lives, which you can do easily, which I was doing here, for effective neutrino mass of 0.1 electron volt, which is, well, I mean, under control, I think, experimentally, you can see the spread in the half-lives. For 82 selenium, you see there is not much spread. So there it seems that the nuclear theorists have done their homework. But for the others, you see there are lots of spread in the matrix elements. So to conclude about this, one should say that partly there is some progress maybe going on, but still lots of coherent work should be done on this matter. Now I go specifically to the one class of nuclear models, which is the random phase approximation type of models. And then in particular to the so-called GPP problem, which has been there already, I don't know, more than 20 years. So let's see what happens with that problem. So I take a classical article here, which is the first calculation of two neutrino double beta decay for realistic interactions. So that was already a long time ago, 87 here. What is relevant in the figure is that here on this axis, y-axis, you see the matrix element, the double beta decay matrix element, and here on the horizontal axis, you can see this parameter GPP, which is actually related to the overall scaling of the interaction, proton-neutron interaction, and in particular in its particle-particle channel. But you don't have to worry about these details. I mean, what is relevant here is that this matrix element is heavily dependent on this parameter, you see. The value of this matrix element is really depending on this parameter. And this is an additional difficulty, you see, within this kind of frameworks when you do the calculations. This one here means that it is a basic interaction, pure interaction, which you are using. So supposedly, the surroundings of this GPP value 1 should be kind of physical region of that parameter here. And what you can do, I mean, what was suggested long time ago and brought up very recently again, was that you can maybe fit this GPP parameter by taking here the experimental value of the matrix element, thank you, and try to see, I mean, what you get. And that was done, and let me show what happens when you do this. One has to be now be very cautious. I have a few words of warning concerning this procedure. This is one typical case now. This is cadmium to tin transition here, two neutrino double beta decay, matrix element here. You see it is a function of GPP. And in principle now, I mean, this is a simple case in a sense that there is this kind of single state dominance. This you can prove by experiment. And also by theory. It means that there is only single state which dominates in this process in double beta decay. So you need only the first ground state of the intermediate nucleus. Essentially everything is going through now through this single state here. So you have the left leg here, the right leg here, and this is enough. I mean, then you can probe that also by experiment. Okay. So that I chose this because this is a simple case. I mean, you just can really have touch on everything in a very simple way. So in this case, this matrix element is just coming from this single 1+ state here. And if you determine your GPP value now based on this curve here, you have this is the experimental value for the matrix element which you can extract from the experiment. And now it gives you this value for the GPP. So now you can look at the individual matrix elements, the left-hand side and the right-hand side matrix element, and compare that to the spectroscopy which is available. And if you do that, you find that these particular values of the matrix elements produce something which is not consistent with the experiment. Actually, I mean, on this side, you see that the theoretical half-life is too short, so it is a too fast a transition here. And this, you see, there's a huge discrepancy on this side because there's one order of magnitude almost difference now between the experimental and theoretical half-life. So one has to be very, very careful when extracting directly from this curve some observables, like this GPP here. So one would do better when, for example, adjusting this m beta minus here to this transition, it will also improve your value for this matrix elements concerning this decay here. It doesn't reproduce exactly the two neutrino double beta decay matrix element, but I think it is more solid thing and more, let's say, physical way to do that. And let me do the same thing now for 82 selenium, which is not that clean-cut case because it's not single-state dominated nucleus at all. But anyway, you can do the same thing here. You can fit the experimental range here, which is including also the experimental error here. So in two places, I mean this is, you have two bands which are corresponding to positive matrix element and the negative matrix element. Then you have these range, two possible ranges for your GPP values. And now you can go to the neutrinoless case and see what happens to the neutrinoless matrix element, which was consisting of very many multiples. So this is what happens. So you can track down now the behavior of the 1 plus multiple. It is here also. You can see it also goes through zero here. So it changes sign here, and the experimental range is at this point, you see. So, but if you compare, I mean, what is the constitution of this how you constitute this or decompose this matrix element for neutrinoless case, you see that this is by far not nothing which would be leading order effect. It is not even sub-leading, so to say. So you see there's lots of contribution coming from the grounds. I mean, this case it is not the ground state, but almost the ground state for the 2 minus state, which is actually the lowest 2 minus state, which is giving this contribution. There's lots of other multiples, 4 minus and 3 plus. How do you control that? I mean, you cannot control that by 2 neutrino double beta decay. You need some new observables. And maybe spectroscopic data, and this spectroscopic data I summarize here. For example, the case of 82 decay here, what you know is this log FT value, so it means that the rate of this decay. So in principle, you can test your 2 minus state now, and actually in the calculation which I was showing, I can reproduce this one here. Okay, so I have to conclude. So we need some new probes, maybe probes for this decays. And actually, I mean, one possibility is to use the muon capture transitions. The other one is charge exchange reactions. And maybe for the high-lying giant resonances, you can use, for example, neutrino scattering experiments. So. And this you can see actually, I mean, this muon capture thing, you can see that when you go to the poster. So this is a 2 neutrino double beta decay, and that you can probe now the wave functions here by using this muon capture. But more of that you can see in the poster of Markus Korteline there. So as conclusion, I should say now, summarize everything this way. So there is still open problem for the convergence of the different theories and different calculations. More coherent input should be needed. It means that you have to start from the same initial point and only then compare different theories. This is not done at the moment in this coherent way, unfortunately not. And then you need some new spectroscopic probes to probe the other multiples of the neutrinoless double beta decay. So, and maybe in the end you are happy when you finish this go. Okay, thanks.
Thank you. Questions or comments?
I certainly agree with you. I think we need some experimental ways, I think, to check the calculations for 1 plus and as well as 2 minus probably. And I think because probably I think it's not necessarily one single particle, but maybe I think low-lying single particle or states. are very important for double beta decays, and they are also tested, as you said, by using charge exchange reactions, for example, you know, helium-3T reactions and T helium-3 reactions for T minus and T plus side. And if we do you know, such reactions, not only 0 degree, we can get 1 plus informations, but for finite angle, finite momentum transfer, we really get informations for 2 minus state as well. And so I think that is quite useful for charge exchange for both T minus and T plus side. And also I think it's, you know, neutrino beam, as I said before, I think, for example, from JPARC 3GeV, it has a potential interest for getting, you know, a low energy neutrino beam on an order of 2 × 10^14 per second. So I think that is also one possibility, I think.
But that is for the high-lying state, like giant resonance states, I suppose. More okay. Appropriate for those.
Okay, I think giant resonance, that's much easier. But I think if we study, I think, neutrino and, you know, electron minus, and if we really, you know, locate low-lying state by tagging gamma rays, for example.
But the neutrino ones are more, I mean, for the high-lying states.
I think, okay, you are right. I think we can do a giant resonance. That is also very important for 1 plus and 2 minus. But I think also, I think if we do a very good spectroscopic study for low-lying state, I think we can do...
I totally agree. My statement was that I don't know if you can probe with the neutrino scattering these low energies. Mm-hmm. Only with the charge exchange reaction you can probe these low energies.
Yes.
I think so. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's my... what I understand.
Any other questions or comments? Okay, if not, oh, there's one over here.
We saw before this beautiful data from NIMO 3. Do you think that these measurements of, I mean, they can detail the information not only of the some energy spectrum. Is there any guidance, theoretical guidance, to get some useful information for zero neutrino double beta decay on the calculation?
Well, I think this kind of information could be used, for example, to discriminate between, I mean, after you measure neutrinos double beta decay, for example, you can distinguish between different mechanisms which are creating this spectrum. I don't know about the two neutrino case, I mean, if this helps so much, but for the neutrinoless case, I think. And of course, it is far away.
They have two neutrinos.
Yes. Well, I don't. Well, in principle, in some cases, you can study this single state dominance. But you can also study that by beta decays and electron capture measurements. Okay, these are complementary. But I see more use of this kind of in this kind of angular correlations of things after you apply that to the neutrinoless decay, which is of course far in the future.
Okay, with that we'll break for coffee and note that the times are changed for the next session.